your current attribution model to back out your marketing and sales goals and your pipeline goals and all those things. Because if you set your goals like, hey, marketing is going to do 60% of the pipeline and sales is going to do 40%, this is what we're doing. And then you create this attribution model later that's like basically first touch and sales is just dumping a billion Zoom info leads in and emailing them and calling them theirs, marketing is going to fail because you've got the wrong attribution model to your goals. Welcome everybody to this week's episode of the OG Ops Podcast. I'm your usual host, Jordan Henderson, and I say that with question marks. The last episode was hosted by Brandon, who is the co-host today. Brandon, you want to say hellos?
Well, hello, hello. Good to be back in the co-host seat.
Yeah, you get demoted. You had a 1 week promotion, but it was good. It was a good episode. I listened to it because it was solid, it was strong. And we're joined by our let's call it like interim host, like now and again. I don't know.
Favorite person.
Favorite person.
We're joined by my favorite person, Amanda Garza. Self-given title, MVP. And today, do you want to do a hello, Amanda?
Hello. Hello, listeners.
Nice. Nice. I like to address them directly so that they know that you're saying mm-hmm.
That's why they like me, because I just speak to the people directly. Yeah.
They love you.
You are a woman of the people. You're my favorite, you're their favorite. Are you just claiming all of these favorites, by the way? You're just putting it out there.
Yeah, I mean, look, like, you don't get anything without, you know, first claiming it. So I'm just claiming it, and hopefully it all aligns, and I become everybody's favorite. But, you know, it doesn't hurt to try.
It's not really that hard to, like, surpass Brandon or myself. I'm kind of a curmudgeon-y asshole, and Brandon's a bit annoying. So, like, it's not hard to go past us. All right. Well, today we're going to do an office hours episode. Shout out to Anna Aldred for gathering questions for office hours, as is her tradition, and putting them in a doc that I actually have open today and ready to go. So are you guys ready?
Let's do it.
I hope so.
Okay. All right. So there's one that's like relatively long on here. We're going to start with that because maybe it'll be good. Maybe it'll be bad. I don't know. There's a lot of spelling errors in it, Anna. Just saying. MOPS and RevOps are two separate entities and own different systems at my org. Oftentimes, marketing and sales will have different numbers at QBRs, and it's awkward. What steps would you take to improve this if you sat on marketing but didn't have any direct oversight over the process of collecting the data itself? Okay.
That sounds fun.
This sounds awful.
Yeah. So this was a reality at LOB, but more recently MOPS now is under the same org as RevOps because, you know, we don't want to have different numbers. The whole goal is to all have the same numbers. Yeah, like, we're all recording the same things. The definitions are the same. I think in this scenario, maybe what I would do is just align on what the definitions are for each thing that you're measuring and make sure that you're measuring the same thing. And then just try to like get down to the core of why you're measuring them differently, or like, how is it that you're measuring them differently? That's my advice. It does sound tragic.
Yeah, no, that's the most foundational advice, I think. Usually different data comes from different definitions, right? And especially if they're two separate orgs, that's the first place to start. Because it doesn't matter what else you do after that. If you don't fix that problem first, the rest is just trash. You're building a house on top of sand, right? So yeah, I mean, that's for sure where I would start. Agreed. Make a shared definitions library, get all boring with it, write it all out, get everybody to agree to them and sign off on it. And then don't let them change them because they will come back to you in 3 months and say, well, we missed our MQL targets, but really this should be MQLs too, which is going to change all your data. So don't let that happen. And then from there, figure out where you're going to get your data from. Because the other piece of that is if you're pulling data from different systems, you're still likely to get different results, right? Nothing is one-to-one. There's always going to, like, people be like, yeah, my HubSpot and Salesforce are one-to-one. Like, it's not though. It's not. It never is. It never really. Figure out where you're going to pull the data from and agree on that as well. And then actually set up all the reporting in a way that you can do it. And by the way, I'll probably get messages about this. I don't think HubSpot or Salesforce necessarily should be your system of truth for data. Like, I think you should have like your own data warehouse or pulling it into another like BI tool that you can use to do that with. So that way everybody can share it and manipulate the data appropriately. But figure that piece out as well. And that way everybody's looking at the data as the quarter progresses with the same definitions. And that way when you get to quarter end, nobody can be upset.
No one's surprised.
Yeah, nobody's surprised. You have the same numbers. You've agreed on the definitions. Like, you're just aligned the whole way.
If you do pull it into like a BI tool, then you are able to just all look at the same dashboard. And so then there's no surprises.
Super easy. Yeah.
That's what you really should be doing. Yeah. It's looking at the same dashboard too.
Yeah.
You know, I walked into something very similar when I joined CrossTick a year ago, and you had different definitions and different dashboards. And even one of the dashboards too was like, or one of the reports in the dashboard, someone went in and they just wanted to look at a different view. So they threw a filter on it and hit save as, and or save instead of run the report. So then the entire
everything.
Yeah, it broke everything. And people were like, why? Like, you're looking at the same report where Salesforce thought they had the same report, but it was on their dashboard. Yeah, it was a whole mess.
This was such a bad question to start with. All three of our faces just went like, wah, wah.
I know. It's like,
okay, but there's an important nuance to this that we're not addressing that they caveated at the end, which is, what steps would you take to improve this if you sat on marketing and don't have any direct oversight over the process of collecting the data itself? So, and I think that's an important caveat, because to answer this question appropriately, because I think, Amanda, your point, your first one still stands. Align the definitions.
You can still bring everybody together and then say like, hey, like this from a marketing perspective, here's how we define MQLs. Right. Other team, RevOps, how do you measure, or like, how do you define it? And if you're aligned there, then the next problem, like if you're not aligned there, that highlights an area for improvement for both teams. The ops teams can then realize like, hey, we're not measuring the same thing, you know? hopefully they have a light bulb moment, right? Then if you are, you know, definitions are the same, then they should still have a light bulb moment that like, okay, well, our definitions are the same. The numbers should be the same. So from a systems perspective, what's going wrong? Like you said, like, is it that we're using different enrichment data and somehow that's affecting the numbers that we're pulling? Or is it that from HubSpot to Salesforce, something's not getting written and we're not changing the definition in Salesforce or whatever the case might be? But then to me, it like shows the areas that they need to start focusing on to then get one-to-one.
Yeah, I think that's the important piece. I think go try really hard to understand how and why they're pulling the data the way they're pulling it. Like, because if you really truly have no power to change how they're pulling the data that they're presenting to your team, at least you should be able to understand what they're doing to pull it, how that works, what sort of criteria they're using, and why. That way you can speak to it and then try to influence it down the road, like bare minimum, right? And if it's so abysmally terrible, if like the sales team has decided they have control over this and the sales team is like, SALs, sales accepted leads, are only SALs once we've had 3 meetings with them, and you're on marketing, you're like, oh my God, like we set goals with an SAL being like sales wanted to call a lead. So this is entirely screwing your reporting. At least then be able to speak to why that doesn't work in that exact meeting, so you guys can as a group figure out how to fix this, because obviously something's fundamentally broken there. But you will catch a lot more, what is it? Catch a lot more flies with honey or bees with honey? What's the saying? Flies? I think it's flies.
Sure. I don't
know. I think it's flies.
It's more flies with honey, right? So don't go in all like, hey, change it to this, change it to this, change it to this. Go in and be like, hey, I want to understand why you understand or why you're doing it this way. Understand why this is important to you and figure out how we can figure this out together, right? You'll get much better results if you don't go in like a bull in a china shop. I'm just full of whatever those things are. Analogies.
I don't even think you have to wait for the meeting either. Like, why not, you know, reach out and align beforehand, like, so you don't have to waste time during that meeting trying to discuss or look stupid on the meeting or whatever. And some people might not even feel safe enough to speak up during the meeting and challenge.
Very true.
You know, with the reporting or anything.
Yeah.
So why not pull the data a few days before, a week before, whatever it is, send it over to your counterpart, say, hey, this is what I'm seeing. Are you seeing the same thing? Oh, no, you're not. Hey, maybe we could jump on a quick Zoom and discuss or whatever.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah. By the way, I think bringing that up in the exec meeting where this is happening in the quarter is probably like last resort. Like nothing has happened. You can't do anything. Like
somehow no one else can figure out there's a problem. Then you're like, hey.
Right. That's the point where I'm like, and I don't care what happens next. Hit the button. Okay. See what happens.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Anyways, let's move on to a more fun topic, because that one was boring. Anna, don't give me these anymore. Riddled with spelling errors.
Well, I don't think that's Anna's fault, but...
It's definitely not Anna's fault.
Next time you gotta spell check.
We're going to get an AI proofreader in here.
Exactly.
Okay, anyways, next question. As a young employee, I don't like the start. Does this imply that we're not young employees?
I'm yeah, I was like, whoa.
How dare you, person?
Someone thought I was 23 more recently in the last couple of days, so I could argue. Maybe I'm a young employee.
Was it like an 8-year-old? Like, kids don't
know. No, it was someone older than me. She thought I was 23. I was like, I definitely don't look 23, but thank you. Yeah, I don't know if she's trying to flatter me or...
Yeah, it gets to like almost insulting, right? Like, you know, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, cool. Like, I'm mature, but still not like I'm a drunken toddler.
Right.
Yeah, got it. Well, Amanda, you could pass for 23 anytime you want.
Thank you. I think. We'll see what the rest of this question has to say.
Derailing into talk radio. Anyways, as a young employee, how did you approach your manager to ask for a raise? Oh, and this person asked to remain anonymous.
Yes. Okay. So, I mean, this question was to me, and I already wrote out the long answer and I sent it over. Should I?
Wait, you preempted this?
They sent it over a while ago, and this is now just getting into this week on LinkedIn. You choose to read which questions.
All right.
So I said, I do think first, like, it's so important on managers to create the culture where they feel, whether people feel safe to come to them and have these questions or have these conversations, right? Like, so many people I know don't even want to have these conversations. Then they'll go look for another job elsewhere. And you just lost a good employee because you didn't create that safe culture, right? The psychological safety. But I said, okay, so they give them a bunch of tips. I said, give your manager a heads up, right? Like, don't blindside your manager with this sort of question or conversation. So whether that's put it in Lattice on what you want to talk about this week, Slack them beforehand and say, hey, just want to give you a heads up this week in our one-on-one, I want to talk about this. Also, know your company policies. I know some of the larger organizations out there, like, they don't do comp adjustments or anything like that, except on like an actual review cycle. They might be doing biannual or just annual reviews like that, where that's when you actually ask for it. So know your policies. If you don't know your policies and you're asking for it outside of a cycle, you could be sending the wrong message there. Come to the table with data and pull multiple sources. I had an employee who actually came to me once with, like, we're a Series A company. We're doing $10 million in revenue. This person came to me with data that was $1 billion company, hundreds of thousands of employees, and they want to basically double their salary. As soon as I see the data that they gave me, I'm like, yeah, this is useless.
Relevant data is important, right?
Yeah, exactly. Relevant data to where you live or it's a similar size and stage of a company that you're at. And then show the business impact that you're having. Don't tell them you have another offer.
That's terrible.
Yeah. I always say, like, don't make it combative. Like, don't come in guns blazing. Like, hey, like, this is, I have to fight for this. Like, I guess, like, don't have that perception in mind. I always say, or the way that I've always approached it is just like, imagine that the person is also wanting to do this for me. Like, how would I have a conversation with them? So, like, when you come with that, then it's more of, how can you help me get this? Or, you know, the conversation is a lot more productive and less, you know, like, you're not putting them in a defensive position, which you don't want to do when you're trying to ask for more money or.
Well, you put them in a defensive position and you lose their trust. Right?
Yeah.
So that becomes the thing. I mean, personally, there's an HBR article from years ago about how counter offers, particularly the effective, like, people who stay on a counter offer. So they come in and say, like, I'm leaving, I got another offer. And I say, hey, I'll counter 20K above, and you stay. After 1 year, roughly 95% of those people have since left the business. Like, the people don't stay long term on a counter offer. Personally, if somebody says, oh, I got an offer and I'm leaving, I go, good job. Congrats to you.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Because it's just not worth, the juice isn't worth the squeeze, right? Boom, nailing the analogies. Anyways, so, like, it's just not an effective way to have this conversation. Because even if it works, you probably won't be there in a year. You've damaged your relationships.
Exactly.
Anytime you want to take a dentist appointment moving forward, they're going to think that you're interviewing somewhere. Like, it is just causing a terrible relationship. So it's a terrible approach. Don't do that. Definitely don't do
it, except if it's like a very last resort. But yeah, don't even say that.
Yeah.
And, like, be prepared to actually walk away at that point, you know, if you're going to actually use it.
If you're going to tell people you have a job offer, be prepared to take that job.
Exactly.
Right? You should take that job if you're at that point.
Yeah, that's probably true. Right.
Yeah. So make sure it's a company that you actually would want to work at instead of just like my only hope because I burned this bridge.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's important both for managers and employees. I mean, when I was a young employee in my life, I still can't believe that what am I, like 80 years old? I'm not even. When I was a young employee, one of the things I always made very sure to do was all of the bosses I ever had knew three things about me. The order of these three things that are important to you, and you should know this about your employees too. What order would you put these in for your career right now? Salary, title, or responsibilities, right? So what you value the most. And there's no wrong answer to that question, by the way, because those are the three things that I, as your manager, can help you get. If you tell me I'm young and I want to learn a bunch, I can help get you more responsibilities so that you can learn a bunch. If you're young and you want your title to be better because you want to impress people and grow professionally in your career that way, I can work to promote you. If salary is more important, then when it comes time for me to make a case for things, I'm going to argue more for salary than for responsibility.
Exactly,
for that, right?
Yep.
It gives my manager the ability to know what I actually value so that when they want to show me they value me as an employee, they know how to do that in the most meaningful way. It's almost like the love languages thing, right? I want my manager to know how to show me that they value me in the way that's most meaningful to me. And it's a really easy conversation to have. Everybody's got one-on-ones and you can just say like, hey, I think it's just really important for you to know that, like, in my order of preferences career-wise right now, here's where I'm at. And
yeah, exactly.
That becomes a collaborative thing.
Yeah, and that's actually one of the pieces that I told this person. Think the whole package, right? So if they can't give you an actual raise, can you get more stock? Can you get a bump in title? Can you get other things? Can you have any other additional, compensation based off of performance or hitting certain milestones, ask for more PTO. There's so much more that you can actually ask for than just straight salary, right?
Yeah.
So I think
and depending on where you're at in your career, you might want to consider that. Like I would actually,
exactly.
I won't give away too much information here, but when I was early in my career, salary was dead last on my list.
Yes.
And I was in a situation where that was okay for me, but I said responsibility and title, right? And I got to like senior director and I was still making less than the SDRs, right? Like it was because I was like, yeah, like I don't care about that. I want the responsibility.
You move up quicker.
I want the titles and I want to keep moving up. Like I want to learn, I want to grow. Then, 10 years later, your career is further ahead. You make up the gap later, right? It's just choosing where you want to invest your energy, basically.
Yep. The other thing I said too is make sure they're happy with your performance. If you haven't hit your goal,
don't go ask for a raise. Yeah.
I've had people that are like, all right, I've been here a year now, I get a raise, right? And I was like, well, look at your OKRs, look at your KPIs. Do you deserve a raise?
Your manager reacts like, I can't believe you're still here, then oh, you're still here? Oh. Nope, you're not getting that raise.
I would say also be sure that your performance is good long term, but also in the immediate, because I feel like there is a recency bias, even though we'd like to say there shouldn't be. There's always going to be a recency bias,
right?
Because especially reviews, in 6 months periods or whatever the case might be at your company, like the things that people are going to write about your feedback on is going to be what you did in the last month. So make sure that you're always perform well, because, or at least that's what I value. I just like doing good work. So that's me. But, just make sure that recently you've been doing very well, especially if you're going to be asking for something more the business.
Everybody knows that annual reviews are more based on November, December than they are January, February, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Anything else?
I think the last thing is well, I guess this kind of goes with what we were just talking about. Like, understand the situation of your company too. Like, if you just laid a lot of people off, if your company just missed their quotas, missed their, new bookings goals, probably not the best time to ask for it.
Except for what will happen with layoffs, and this is really particularly true for ops folks, is the layoffs will happen and then the ops team will get dumped 40 more things on their plate to do each person. And they're mission critical, right? And so at that point, actually in ops, I would say it's okay to have a conversation.
Yeah, I would say don't let that stop you.
Two jobs now, and you guys are I know you cut one to save $150,000. I want you to give me $25,000 of that. And then you can still save the 125 because, by the way, you've cut that everybody out. You need me at this point. This is also a good time to, I think it's totally fine, especially as you're getting dumped more work on you.
Well, in that case, I would say then make sure they understand what you can expect from them.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah. I think suffering in silence through those things is something that everybody does. We shouldn't do it. Companies laying off, feel free to chirp up. Be a squeaky wheel. It's okay to be a squeaky wheel.
Be a squeaky wheel.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt to ask. Like, that's the takeaway. It's like, just ask. It doesn't matter if you're young. It doesn't matter if you're
Jordan's
age.
Well, don't ask if you're at 20% of quota on the year.
I mean, other things matter, but it doesn't matter where, just ask.
Yeah, and practice.
And if you don't get it, at least you learn why you didn't get it. And then you can know exactly what you need to improve on so that next conversation you have, whether that's in 6 months or whatever the case might be, you actually know how specifically what you should be focusing on to then at that point ask again. Because the takeaway is, I personally would just say, don't be afraid to ask.
I think your second one is actually the most important piece, though, which is the feedback. Because I think people do this. They'll ask for a raise. They get told, no. We don't have budget, not right now, right? And they get sad and upset and they just move on. No, actually, you're totally right. Okay, can I understand why and how do I get to the point where I get this raise in 6 months, right? Ask those questions, because then you're working collaboratively to make a roadmap with your manager to get you to that point, which then you start.
And you're asking them to be very specific too, which sometimes managers, don't like doing, but
good.
You have to ask them specifically what you need to do, what you need to show in the next 6 months, and then you can create a plan for how you do that together. And if that's the case, and your manager measuring you on that bar, and then by the time you get to 6 months, you should already know whether or not it's coming.
I love that point too. Make a plan, get it in writing, so that then in 6 months, when you say, "All right, great, I fit these things," they don't say, "I never said that. I never said you'd get a raise."
Right. And you still might not, but then it's time to start looking at other companies.
Exactly.
that's okay.
You did what you could do at that point.
Not everyone's going to be a winner, despite what our best intentions are. Okay. Anyways, moving on. There's three more questions on this list. That one looks boring. Moving on. Okay. Wow. Okay. Where do you think attribution is important, and where is it just a waste of time?
Always. No. Both? I don't know.
Get the words out of my mouth.
Have you seen that? I'm trying to think of it. There's a shirt and a coffee mug out there that's basically I think it says attribution is fake news. We literally made it up. I want to wear that shirt to all meetings.
Yeah, but all words are made up, right?
I feel like it's just like a bar to measure teams against so that they have something to strive for. But really at the end of the day, all that personally I care about is are we hitting our total pipeline goals or total MQL goals? Whatever we're attributing to certain things, that to me is what matters most. I could see there's a case for it about whether or not you spend dollars in certain places, for the marketing team. But, I think you also in that case have to keep in mind the total journey that a lead goes through. And then you get into multi-touch attribution, and that becomes a whole thing and a whole more complex process. And, it just gets at the end of the day, do I care? No.
That's where it becomes a waste of time, when you get into the Cain and Abel sales and marketing situation, right? Where they're just using attribution to figure out how to stab each other in the back because they're missing
or to prove
and they
that you're
show
doing what you're doing.
Marketing's fault, or it's sales fault, or I need more budget, or so on and so forth. At that point, you're just using it as a hatchet. I mean, that's where it's really a waste of time. And that's never how it was intended to be used. It was intended to be used, Amanda, like you said, which is to decide where I'm going to put budget and figure out where the best leads are coming from and decide how to optimize my process to my buyer's journey. It was meant to help inform decisions, not to be used as essentially a hatchet to chop down trees, right? And getting companies to align around an attribution model and to tie everybody to goals that aren't dependent on the intricacies of that attribution model is very difficult. But if you can do it, then attribution is actually important and valuable. Most of the time, that's just going to be really hard to do.
Right. But yeah, I was going to say the place where I think a lot of people get in trouble is only relying on attribution and not taking like intuition and like, you know, just good critical thinking into account. Right. Like, and also using attribution, like there's different kinds of attribution. So if we're talking first touch attribution, but you want to know what's the thing that actually converts people to a demo or an opportunity, you're not going to use first touch attribution on that. That would be stupid, right?
Yeah.
This is like using the wrong types of attribution to answer the questions that you're trying to answer. And then the other one too, that just drives me crazy is like benchmarks. I freaking hate benchmarks because there's these industry benchmarks and it's so
dumb.
It's so out of context. And it's like,
right.
Yeah, it's like conversion rate should be X. And then it's like you're looking at Bessemer's like Cloud 100 companies and it's like all these companies are well-funded. They're the best in class. And now your CEO expects you to hit these numbers. And
right.
It's like benchmarks are useless.
Yeah.
And then
especially when you start to layer in things like attribution, because like every company uses a different attribution model. And so if you're using, like we surveyed 150 companies and here's their results. So here's our benchmarks. Like you might not be using the same attribution model as any of those 150 companies. And therefore your funnel is fundamentally different. And so those benchmarks don't make any sense to you. So if you're setting your goals off of those benchmarks and then you're using a different attribution model, you're not going to hit your goals.
You're screwed.
Somebody is going to fail and then you're going to fight each other. So I think the easiest thing to do is when you start to get into attribution, make sure that you're using your current attribution model to back out your marketing and sales goals and your pipeline goals and all those things. Because if you set your goals like, hey, marketing is going to do 60% of the pipeline and sales is going to do 40%, this is what we're doing. And then you create this attribution model later that's like basically first touch and sales is just dumping a billion Zoom info leads in and emailing them and calling them theirs. Marketing is going to fail because you've got the wrong attribution model to your goals. And then marketing and sales are going to fight and you've created this downstream thing. Huge waste of time. So attribution can be really powerful to make decisions. It can be really powerful to help you set goals. It's also really important if you want to use it to do those things first. Otherwise, it will break everything. And that's why everybody hates it and loves it at the same time.
Yeah. The other way, now that we're talking, because this happened to me in the past before, got people in trouble, is like you're looking at attribution. We're like, okay, great. This one channel was our best ROI by far. Now we're just going to dump all of our budget into this channel and it doesn't scale. And now you've just screwed your pipeline for the rest of the quarter or the rest of the year even.
Yeah.
So it's like, do it incrementally and just know the limits of the channels. Because I could have told you doing direct mail isn't going to scale like that. Of course, direct mail at lower volumes, more targeted, is going to be way better than just blasting everyone.
Which if you all need help with, feel free to go to lob.com.
There you go.
Thank you, Brandon, for teeing that one up.
Did you just lob her a softball right now?
Did you mean to do that? Because that was great. I hope all of the meetings get attributed to me personally.
There you go.
From this podcast.
/co-host /person on the podcast. Yeah. Got it. Yep. Slams a beer on camera right now. Nice. It was way more impressive if it was a beer can. Anything else on attribution?
No, I hate talking about attribution.
We have two whole episodes on attribution. One of them, I did a panel with Greg Poirier and Cloud Kettle and a bunch of other bright people that were smarter than I was about attribution. Go listen to that. It's really helpful. Brandon just did an episode on it with Jolie. Is that his name?
Jolie.
And I just listened to that last week. It was great. So go listen to that one as well. So there's resources on attribution. Go check them out.
We get a lot of attribution questions.
I know, it's because nobody knows how to do it. That's the problem. Yeah. It's like, you know what happens, everybody, they send us questions when they're frustrated with something. Like I think most questions come from a place of frustration, and everybody's frustrated with attribution because it causes
exactly.
So that's why we get all these questions, I'm pretty sure. Anyways, go fix your attribution model today and that'll be fun for you. And next question, you guys ready? You ready to move on?
Yeah, let's do it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, cool. There's two questions on here, and one of them is about a topic that I actually like less than attribution, and the other one is super broad and boring. So we're going to go with the one that I like less, which is, when is it time to truly put in CPQ versus products versus home-built solutions? I hate CPQ. So much. For most companies, the honest answer, most companies are small businesses, right? You don't need like a massive CPQ system for most, especially software businesses. Pandadox will do just fine for what most businesses need. It has invoicing, it has approvals, it has all that stuff, it has contract generation and e-signature. It's relatively affordable. You don't need like Salesforce CPQ and $150,000 in consultants fees in a year of your life to get that stood up in a way that you can never edit because it's terrifying and touches everything. It's just overkill for most businesses. And Aptus won't even do business with you because they don't do business unless it's like $100,000 or more per year. So they won't talk to you. So, which should tell you how badly you need CPQ, if you think about it. There's two vendors. One of them has to, you have to pay $150K to a consultant. The other one won't do business with you. So,
yeah, there's other like smaller businesses now that are doing CPQ.
OneWay does it pretty well if you want a small one for sure. What other ones have you seen?
I've seen a company called Subscribe. There's another one called DealHub.
DealHub's cool.
Yeah. But again, like I don't know the pricing on those. So if you're a really small business, then it's probably not worth your time to like visit those. Like Jordan saying, PandaDoc feels very reasonably priced. So you could probably get a lot of what you need done through that. But yeah, CPQ is a beast of a project. It's a whole other sales force, essentially.
Yeah. There'll be instances where you have like a high transaction business where you want to set up a portal and connect it straight to a CPQ and like do the thing, right? And I get that. It's probably going to happen. Somebody out there is going to say, hey, we have to do it even though we're 100 people. Yeah, that's totally exists. But from talking to 80% of companies, it's just overkill. And you can save yourself a lot of time, headache, and money. And by the way, most of the time, this is probably going to get me hate mail, but most of the time, if you contract somebody to install CPQ and you do this one-year implementation, it really won't work that well. It doesn't.
It's not flexible. Like I've actually gone through to learn like Salesforce CPQ. I've gone through like the admin training or whatever.
Yeah.
I haven't taken the test because I don't care to. Because I don't care to be a CPQ admin. I don't want to like. I don't want people to know that about me. So forget that I said it. But it is insanely complex. It's not flexible, and so I would recommend not going that route if you value flexibility in your business. You know, so if you're a smaller business and you're still trying things out, testing new pricing models, like doing a lot of different things year over year to finally get to where you think you're going to scale, then I think it's not worth it yet.
Totally agree. And I'll get like three messages from people that go like, well, PandaDox doesn't have XYZ feature that exists in Salesforce. Stop being a jabroni. Like 80% of people don't need it. Go look at the other ones, DealHub, Ordway, PandaDox. Like I know they're not traditional, like 100% CPQ, but they're really cool. They do most of everything that you need them to do. Most of them can integrate into Salesforce and your finance system if you're using NetSuite or even QuickBooks, I think, actually integrates with both of them. So for most businesses, and when we're talking about the podcast, I mean, most businesses in America are very small. So that is, I'm not answering this question, does fucking Google need to get CPQ? I'm answering the question, does Joe's Pizza Shop need to get CPQ, right? And no, it doesn't.
It does not,
Anyways. I hate CPQ so much. So this is just a really annoying office hours episode.
Everybody decided to ask all the questions. All the very difficult questions today.
Is the things we never talk about, basically, because we hate talking about them.
So. We avoid them.
All right. Well, we have one more question, but it's real broad. So maybe I'll phrase this like a little bit differently to try to like make this a little more succinct. How, as ops, do you break down silos that keep popping up amongst your teams? And let's say, what are your top two tips for breaking down silos that keep popping up amongst teams?
My first one, I think we kind of touched on it earlier, is just like the whole thing about making sure you're reporting on the same things and you're speaking the same language. Like that is like the number one thing, is you have the same goals, you have the same definitions, you're reporting on the same, like, I think like the most fundamental thing that you can do to start getting it on the same page.
Yeah. I love that one. OKRs. Implement OKRs. I love OKRs. Do them. They're amazing. Own them as ops. Objectives and key results. Go research it. It's created by IBM in the 80s. Then they added the objectives piece later. It's great for aligning your teams at a business level and an individual level from the bottom to the top, and will knock out silos if you do it effectively.
It has to be company-wide. It has to be top-down.
Has to be. From and your execs have to be bought in. And I love for ops to own it, get the execs to set theirs, and then just work your way through the company, getting everybody to do it. It's awesome. Because your job is aligning everybody. So go align everybody. It's a really good, it's basically like a tool for you to use to align people. What else?
I'm trying to think about the question, like silos between teams on the revenue team or even just like between any team or silos. Yeah, it's a very vague question. So it's very hard for me to answer specifically.
Whoever asked this question, get your shit together. Get it all together. Yeah.
Very specific. If you haven't learned, definitions matter. Definitions. You're talking to an ops person. You need to be specific.
This is a high sodium content episode. Oh my God. Okay. Any other tips? Do we have any other tips for this person?
I would say the other things I think about, like I think about this all the time because I'm always making sure that I'm aligned with my VP of sales. And like I was just in a meeting with him today about doing campaign planning, right? Like I'm putting together the campaigns and I'm mapping everything out. I'm doing the roles and responsibilities, the timelines, et cetera. And like, I'm not saying, hey, Jeff, like, is this okay? It's, hey, here's the plan. Let's talk about it. Let's make sure your reps are comfortable with this. It aligns with his, you know, with your objectives. So like joint campaign planning, I think it's important to do retrospectives with both sales and market. I mean, the whole go-to-market team on these campaigns. So it's not just, well, that didn't go well. Let's move on to the next one. It's all right. Well, that didn't go well. Or that went great. What can we learn from it? And we're like learning as a team. So it's not just, you know, marketing doing marketing's QBR or retrospective or whatever. It's like the entire team is doing it all together. And then things like, yeah, make sure you have your weekly one-on-ones with your counterparts and those shared dashboards. Yeah, you got,
yeah,
you know, weekly review of all these things. You got SLAs in place to hold both people accountable or all sides accountable. You know, stuff like this.
I have one that somebody reminded me of this recently, and I think a lot of people have forgotten in the past couple of years. But when they said it, I was like, holy smokes, that's a super important thing that I think we all forget in ops, particularly because we're robots. The most important thing to knocking down silos is building personal relationships with people on the teams.
Yeah, absolutely.
We talk a lot about like business-wise, do this and align on KPIs and like all those things, but you will still have silos unless you've built trust with your colleagues internally and personal relationships. I'm not saying you have to have best friends, but go have a beer with somebody, right? Like, I don't care if it's virtual, whatever. Like, build a personal relationship with the people who are stakeholders and be intentional about doing so, because that trust is going to help you knock down silos more than pretty much anything else. You can do every process thing in the world, but absent having some versions of relationships with folks, it's going to be a total waste of time. And I say that because this was brought to me, somebody actually like brought this up to me 10 days ago. And I was like, oh my God, like, yeah, sitting at home, working from home, we totally spaced this. And I host a podcast for 2 years with a guy that was on the marketing team at a company that I was at, right? Like, we had personal, we were focused on making personal relationships, and that was important for us not having silos. And so, again, who knows? Maybe you'll make lifelong friends. Go do whatever you want.
Maybe we'll start a podcast together.
Honestly, start a podcast, do whatever. I think it's too easy for us to think about it as like, let's take KPIs, let's get definitions, like this is going to all fix it. Like, no. Yeah, until you can have a beer together and shake hands and know that when something's broken, that person's picking up their phone and calling you to talk to you about it right away because they trust you and they get along with you, you won't knock them down anyways. So,
yeah, I think like without that too, you probably wouldn't completely understand where they're coming from and what their goals are. And so unless you know that, then anything you say to them, you're probably not communicating it in a way that they're going to hear it well. Or it comes back to like also don't enter in conversations being very defensive about certain things. So just because it's a process that you created or reports that you created or definitions that you documented, like whatever the case might be, businesses change. And so always kind of be fluid and open to hearing others out and making sure that like whatever you're doing, you understand what they're trying to accomplish and you're helping to support that goal.
I love that.
Well said.
Very well said. Anyways, that was as soft as you guys are ever going to get me to be on the podcast. So,
what a nice way to end it.
Anyways, Any other last thoughts for this office hours episode? Otherwise, can I get all burly and gruff again and finish this out and be done with
the Yeah, you can part? Go back to your usual self. Yeah.
80 episodes in, you guys got me to talk about feelings once. So, well, thank you everybody for listening to this week's episode of the OG Ops Podcast. Amanda, thanks for joining in. You are our favorite person and slash co-host slash guest, whatever we're going to call that. Give us 5 stars wherever you listen to your podcast. Don't forget to write us reviews on both Spotify and Apple. They're very helpful for us. Follow all 3 of us on LinkedIn. Send your questions for this week on LinkedIn and follow us on Instagram. Update the CRM. See the memes. They're pretty good. I make them. So whatever. Don't hate me.
Gotta be good if Jordan makes it.
You probably gave him content in your questions today. Something it sparked a new meme.
A few angry things that popped up in my mind about this that are definitely going into a meme tomorrow. So
yeah.
So thank you for that. And we will see everybody next week.